Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Join us on Monday evenings, U.S. Eastern Time, as we explore homeopathy and facial analysis, a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brooke and Grant Bentley, homeopath and naturopath. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go! Okay. We're beginning this evening, January 23rd, 2012, and in Australia, it's January 24th already. You're way ahead of us over here, and I am Debbie Brooke, founder of Homeopathy World Community. Grant Bentley is on the line with us today, an Australian homeopath specializing in the facial analysis method. If you've been following along, we've had probably 10 sessions already. And he's given us a baseline, and we're going to be talking about something different today, discussing life themes that we uncover and how that displays the mental state of the patient. Grant will also discuss the limitations of emotions and how to use emotions as part of the case analysis and case management. We can tell you that on HWC, there is a link directly to his website, to many more available downloads, audios, learning tools, and everything on his website about courses. And so that's where you need to go to get further information and to contact Grant Bentley directly to that place on HWC, Homeopathy World Community. It's on the right-hand column, and when you click it, it opens a page that takes you to your VCCH. Is it VCCH.org?
Yes, it should be.
Okay, VCCH.org. And we're going to just get right into it, talk up a storm for 30 minutes, and finish up shortly.
Okay, well, look, nice to talk to you again, Debbie. I thought tonight what I'd do is that just move away a little bit from the history of HFA and its development and so on, which is all important background. But I thought what I'd do is just that I'd take a topic which is pretty contemporary when it comes to homeopathy, and that is the use of the mentals. Now, There is an element where the mentals is everything when it comes to the selection of a remedy, and there's an aphorism or two in Hahnemann's Organon where he does say quite specifically that the mental symptoms will be the guiding light to choosing the remedy. There's no doubt about that. So, but at the same time, in saying that, it's also really important to point out that the vast majority, if we're talking about the sixth edition of the Organon, the vast majority of the Organon is all about understanding how homeopathy works, its relationship to the chronic diseases and the miasms, and also to a little bit later on in the book is the reference to his new posology and the importance of repetition of the medicine. So while there are one or two aphorisms, one in particular that I can think of, that do state the importance of the mentals, I think what we need to bear in mind is that the sheer weight of the book, therefore emphasising what Hahnemann believed was the importance of that moment, is really based on the treatment of chronic diseases by understanding the miasms and not really the mentals if we're taking the weight of aphorisms by sheer number. But that being the case, what we see is that the mentals have become, at least in contemporary homeopathy, probably the most important aspect that homeopaths think is vital to getting a case and unlocking that case. We see really one of probably the biggest industry within homeopathic circles is the selling of information regarding insights to remedies and so on. That's generally what most of the books are about at the moment, or what could be, you know, really commonly just put under the broadcast of Materia Medica. However, there are some, in saying that, there are some that say that if you need thousands of remedies, then you don't know how to use your Polycrest properly. So, you know, I mean, it all comes down to what you think. But essentially what we're looking at is that contemporary Western homeopathy, at least, is all about understanding the mentals and understanding the character of a remedy in a kind of a... Look, for the want of a better word, it's in a very anthropomorphic way. We're seeing animals and minerals, and we're seeing plants with these, and imbibing them with very human qualities, and then trying to match those human qualities back up to the patient that's sitting in front of us. Now, of course, that's kind of not what Hahnemann meant at all when he was talking about the mentals, but in fact that's where we've come. So
we're not supposed to interpret it. In other words, it's supposed to be something very observable from when we look at the organon and what Hahnemann said, that this is factual, that
exactly.
A person says that this is what they're feeling, experiencing, seeing, whatever that fear or delusion or dream is, it's real for them, and they say that. We're not interpreting it.
Yes, that's exactly right. And yes, in knowing all that, that's in fact where a lot of aspects of homeopathy are not. I mean, they're heading down a different avenue. You see... a lot of it where it is more speculative, and it is that anthropomorphic projection onto things. And what we see is, rather than proving, you don't want to. It's not meant to be mudslinging, but at the same time, what we need to understand is that going to things like Wikipedia and mixing up, finding out the characteristic traits of a turtle and seeing that in our patient does not mean that that is really the similimum as Hahnemann understood it. And so the whole idea of the mentals being important and giving you a good characteristic can be divided into a couple of ways. I mean, the first one, as you very rightly point out, is that it had to be something that was factual. And what we mean by that is this is aphorism, I think it is, where you have to match up the provings to what the patient is experiencing. I shouldn't quote aphorism. I'm really not good at which one they are. I know some people can do it very well. I'm not one of those people, so I've probably got that wrong. But essentially what you're saying is that it had to be factual. So during the proving, that person had to experience that dream, had to experience that sensation. And when that has become a dominant feature in their case, then we match those two things up. But what we're not doing is that we are not sort of saying, well, look, you know, they're behaving like a predator, so therefore they're obviously a predatory animal, and then Wikipedia what a predatory animal might, how it might behave. I think that's a long, very long bow in drawing what Hahnemann says about the mentals and where it's actually come. Where that's moving back into more doctrine of signatures, which of course is the very thing that the written in the organon that the provings were meant to go against. I mean, the provings, Hahnemann has always written, look, the doctrine of signatures may be quite true. I mean, he's not saying that anybody's wrong, just as I'm not. But the simple fact of the matter is if it is a real truth, then it really should come through in the proving. So why don't we forget the folklore just for a moment, see what it is that we can prove, and then if the provings match the folklore, well, then how good is that? But if the provings don't match the folklore, well, then we've got a real problem on our hands. The second thing, of course, to do with the mentals, as Hahnemann was saying, was is that it was the deviation away from health. So it isn't this kind of idea that was almost, I guess, begun by Kent and then taken on by Tyler, and it's just kind of developed its own life force from there. Borland was another one with his children's types. And what you get is, rather than the mentals just being simple aspects or rubrics that people will talk about and then just bringing them into anger or bringing them into grief from a death or so on, these simple one-statement terms, what it's developed into is a whole characteristic profile. Now, Hahnemann talks about how, you know, perhaps then, you know, Pulsatilla might be a little weepier or something, but there's always a perhaps there. It's not necessary, because then when you look up aggressive and you look up angry, for example, then Pulsatilla is a three amongst it. So what you see happening when you do a personality profile, what Kent began, Tyler began, and what is essentially now accepted homeopathy, but I really do challenge that, is that you're building something out of, or a picture out of, a very select few few rubrics. For example, if I can just say, like with Nat Mer, for example. Now, we know Nat Mer is very, very stoic. It's reserved. It's meant to go away to cry. It never shows its emotions. It's a martyr, and so on. But when you go back into the provings, that happened to so few people by comparison to the actual demonstrative display of emotion, that, in fact, you do wonder why we're choosing the lesser rather than the greater when it comes to the magnitude of the provers that experience that. And so we only end up with a very, very small snapshot by doing this anthropomorphic projection, by doing this idea that this is what Nat Mer is, this is what a spongier person is, or this is who a Staphysagria person is. What I've found, and I used to do this very much, I was very much caught into this. As you know, I used to do a lot of the psychotherapy, so it was very easy for me to just move into that area, although I've... this is difficult to say without sounding offensive, but the psychotherapy or the psychoanalysis that I think that some of the homeopaths use is very limited. So it's more a pop psychology than an actual psychology. But that being the case, I understand what it is that they're trying to do, and I embrace that to a great degree. But what I understand that what I understand about this now is that when you really go back, and look, a very good series of books to prove my point will be Allen's Encyclopedia. It's a 10-volume encyclopedia of all the provings. Now, I think we're talking about T.F. Allen here, Timothy Field, not the Allen's Keynotes, nor the Allen that writes the chronic miasms and X-ray provings. That's a J.H. Allen. This is T.F. Allen. And T.F. Allen wrote a 10-volume series, and it's essentially the encapsulation. It's an encyclopedia of all of the provings and who proved what and really breaking it down. When you go through those volumes, one of the things that became increasingly obvious to me was the limitation that personality profiles put on that remedy. Now, I understand why they have occurred. because it's easier for human beings to think that way. Human beings, because we have lived in groups, we need to live in groups and always have, we associate information into human terms very easily, meaning that we can understand the intricacies and remember the character of a person far more than we can just remember singular bits of information. So we can understand a NatMer type by association better than we can memorize 15 different dot points about NatMer. So I do get why these things have taken off. But understanding that it makes for easier recognition and easier learning still doesn't change the fact that it's grossly incomplete. What that means is that for every NatMer who is fitting the image of the archetypical NatMer patient, that NatMer as a remedy could be given to 9 people out of 10 that don't fit that particular archetypical portrait, meaning that we're missing using NatMer 9 times out of 10 and only getting the 10th one. And so this is you know, the changeability, the emotional aspect of pulsatilla, that, you know, all of these sort of things which help us understand. But are we really expected to think that everyone in an emotional state or in a changeable state is going to respond to pulsatilla, when we know for a fact that that's not the case? Our own experience tells us that's not the case. And yet, at the same time, we persist with the archetypes. What we've eventually done through the HFA process, I'll just give you a little bit of a background. In the HFA process, one of the hardest things that I had to do in my whole homeopathic career, which has now spanned for approximately 20 years, The hardest thing for me to do was to undo the learning that was in my head regarding remedy portraits. The reason for that is because the learning of it is so easy, and that means undoing it is very difficult. But how I learned that I had to undo it was because of the face. In HFA, we know that the facial analysis gives us a precise indicator of the internal miasm of the patient. We know through chronic diseases and Hahnemann's writings that the remedy that we select on the symptom totality must also match the internal energy of that patient. Now, through HFA, how we have a way of being able to decipher what that internal energy is, we just simply match it up, meaning that I will do a standard repertorization, which is based predominantly on the generals of the case, but there are also some mentals there, and I'll get into how I use them. But then what I'm left with is a core of well-repertorized remedies, but only in a very small number of those remedies will match the miasm of the patient. Let's say, for example, this time that the patient's miasm is tubercular. So I only need to select the tubercular remedies, the psychotic remedies like Thuja or the syphilitic like mercury, and I'm discarding the layers. The layers theory is just bunkum to me, but maybe that's a topic for another day. But the simple fact of the matter is that following Hahnemann's instructions, the tubercular miasm of the patient must be matched with that same energy pattern that is inside the remedy. Now, during the course of discovering HFA and trialing it out and using it, I not only found that the face was pretty much 100% effective if you can get it. That doesn't necessarily mean that you'll get the right remedy first go, but it means that nature doesn't lie. So what we have is that I would then give, say, let's just say the patient that is sitting in front of me is tall and dark and effervescent, and phosphorus was a major remedy that was coming through. Now, of course, phosphorus would match that personality profile of that patient, particularly in a, say, a Tyler-esque sort of way. And so as a result of that, I would always give the phosphorus to that patient. And what was surprising to me as the practitioner was that a great deal of the time, even though it's well repertorized on presenting general, so it's all factual, would not work. So at first, for a long time, what I was doing, of course, was is that I was doubting the whole facial analysis, and maybe I had that wrong. But what I began doing is starting to look. There was enough of a curve of success to let me know that no, the facial analysis in theory is right, but there's some other weak link in the chain, because everything. There's the old saying is that success, the truth is what works. And so it doesn't matter how much your remedy seems like it fits that person. If it doesn't work, you throw it in the bin. And so I would use phosphorus, and then nothing would happen. But the next well-repertorized remedy on my list would be something like calcarb. Now, calcarb, I look at my patient, they're not fair, fat, and flabby. They're not anything to do with calcarb. But I decided, because it's well repertorized and they're both patient and remedy tubercular, that I will give it a go. Now, what has made me understand that I no longer believe in the entirety of the personality profiles is that too many people who should not have been calcarb responded positively to that calcarb. It was right in front of my face. So I stress again, that doesn't mean that the personality profile of the phosphorus isn't right or that the calcarb isn't right, but it is so limiting that you're going to, if you become like I was, an essence prescriber, then I guarantee you, in fact, I will promise you that you will miss 90% of the people that will still respond to a basic polycrest remedy. And I've proved that. And so in some degree, I've got to now fall into the camp with that. And I don't even know who said it, but I got to fall into that camp of that, look, if you having to use thousands of remedies, then you don't know your polycrest well. It's the same as Hahnemann. Here, Hahnemann proved numerous, numerous remedies, but he's just used the same 50 or 70 to 100 over and over and over again, because the better he got at understanding how to use them. So we can't have it both ways. You can't have that a specific personality type alone needs phosphorus, and yet phosphorus is also a polycrest. Because a polycrest means that it was a drug of many uses for many types of people. So the moment that you limit the polycrests like calcarb, sulfur, phosphorus, pulsatilla, the moment that you have a personality type and say that is it, so you get these, as I used to go to over and over, you look, let me tell you about pulsatilla, says the speaker. Now, the moment that there is a pulsatilla type, you know, the alarm bells should ring that something is wrong. And the reason that we know that something's wrong is that an archetype cannot extend into a polycrest, because you can't have a type and yet have a drug for many types of people. So something is immediately and automatically wrong. And that's what I began to rediscover. I began to rediscover Hahnemann's idea of the polycrest and how to use them properly. Now, that doesn't mean to say that the mentals become irrelevant. The mentals are still an important part of the case. But what we do now is that we just use them in a more factual way. The other way that we can use them is that we will often use them in what we call a life theme. Now, a life theme is a repeating pattern that occurs to somebody. There are a couple of ways we can look at homeopathy. We can look at it as a medicine, or we can look at it as a law of nature, an energy. And as an energy or as a law of nature, then it has got to abide by the laws of nature and the laws of energy and motion. And one of the laws of motion is that everything is, you know, there is an equal and opposite reaction, meaning that if somebody is in a state of chronic disease, that there should be an equal, not a subtle, but an equal stressor to the display or the extent of the pathology that that person is experiencing. And so as a result of that, that is one of the things that I'm looking for. And I will use that continuous momentum, that push or that cause to the effect, and I will use that and try and define it into a rubric. Now, a good example of that, and this is where we call it life themes, because it's something that will often happen continuously through life. For example, we have a lot of patients who, they might be 40, and all of a sudden their body is just breaking down pretty much under the stress of life. So what we've got to do is that we've got to find out what those stressors are. I mean, this is Hahnemannian homeopathy at its most core. Find the cause. That's the basis of chronic disease. That's why he needed to come up with prior cause. So we, instead of asking people to perhaps go through a sensation method or try to match their entire personality to a particular remedy, what we're doing now is we're finding far more successfully that it's easier to take somebody's biography and to try and look for these repeating life patterns. For example, if somebody grew up in a family where the father was abusive or violent, and then later on in their adult life finds that they marry a violent person, then that violence would now become a rubric. So we see the violence, so we would go to the mentals because that's where it's located in our repertory. We would go to the mentals section of our repertory and take violence and then drop that into our repertorization, and that will form a major aspect of our case. So we would match something like that with a number of generals, and then that will form what we call the life theme, you see?
I'm here.
Okay. Yes.
I've been listening. I had myself on quiet so that I wouldn't disturb the continuation, you know, the continuity of what you were saying. You have more time if you wish. You may have an appointment that you need to get to.
I can do another 5 minutes if that's okay with you.
Yes, I extended the time.
Okay, well, look, what we do, as you can, now, if you want to ask anything, then please feel free. But you see, one of the major differences there is that we are using rubrics from the mental section of the repertory, but it's not necessarily a rubric per se. So when that person is sitting in front of me, let's just say it's a very sweet woman here, but she's got rheumatoid arthritis, or she's got late onset asthma, or possibly all of the above. we know that the outcome means that there is generally, not in every single case, which is kind of surprising in itself, but I guess that's dealing with human beings, is nothing ever fits into a pattern. So you can only really, you can only prepare yourself or create a system to suit the majority. You'll never get it for everybody. But that, it's fair to say that the majority of people who would come in that condition at that stage of their life, being only 40, have they... And not born with any physical defect. Mm-hmm. What that means is that essentially their body has been worn out by stress. So it's our job as these stress experts to find out what the stressor is. And the stressor is often located in the mental section of our repertory. So I am not saying for any shape that person that's sitting in front of me is a violent person. But the violence is the cause of where we find this person's, or the origins of this person's pathology. They had violence in their life in an early life, married into violence, and that violence and the impact of it, meaning that, you know, just the whole tension that goes with it, has worn this person down to such a degree that essentially their immunity drops, they pick up things or can, you know, develop an autoimmune disease, whatever it may be.
But how they responded to that violence in their life.
Well, how they responded to that violence in their life and how their body is trying to balance itself and mm-hmm. correct itself, trying to... Your body is always trying to, it walks a tightrope. So every time it leans over to the right, it tries to correct itself by going to the left a little bit so it can stay on track. Now that correcting, that self ability to correct, or at least the attempt to correct, that is what we see in the generals. That's essentially what a general is. It is the body's attempt at correcting itself against the stressor. When it fails at its job because the stressor is just too ongoing and too constant, then that's what pathology is. So Kent is right when he says, look, we shouldn't start with pathology, because pathology is the end result, and it is. What we see with pathology is the inability to be able to self-correct against the strain. But the attempt to self-correct is what we call in homeopathy the generals. And so that's why it's really vital that our remedies double up on our body's attempt at correcting itself. But at the same time, we need to include what is throwing it off balance in the first place. In this make-believe scenario, it is the violence itself. So we would have violence in there. We might even have, if this poor woman, you know, has been beaten and battered around, we might also go to the generals and put in the injuries. And then after that, then we would do our better fors, worse fors, and sensations that she experiences. And that's essentially a very, very quick introduction to an HFA repertorization.
Well, thank you. It's been really helpful and enlightening and intriguing to understand the way that you approach a case and what factors are you're looking for or you're listening for when the patient is there in front of you and describing what's going on with them. And when you were kept going over this general for the person to deal with these stressors and keep balance against those stressors, I kept thinking of the word compensation or coping mechanisms.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's where we keep getting, and that stressor, we're talking about an emotional or social stressor now, but that stressor can be anything, because remember, your body has an innateness about it, but it's not conscious, it's not thinking about it. So it's still going to react to chemical stresses such as alcohol, right? So we know that if we overindulge in alcohol, then we get general effects of that afterwards as our body is trying to cleanse itself. And it does that with every stressor.
And even just overlifting, that's a stressor. Well, you have to move a box, and you know, or weightlifting or whatever, your body's going to stress and strain against that.
That's exactly right. And HFA is what we're trying to do is move away from including it. It's not so much not understanding homeopathy as a medicine so much in a medical model, meaning via pathology, and certainly not via a psychological medicine. It's not meant to be out there trying to diagnose or identify aberrant behavior. It's an energy medicine. It's understanding the ebbs and flows of energy and how we react to it. And we are trying to just simply put that person back on that tightrope. And that's why I always refer to people all the way through our books. Like if you read, say, a book like Soul and Survival, for example, that talks about this, Then what we're really looking for, I don't talk about disease or anything like that all that much. We just really talk about patients as in balance and out of balance. All the way through the online course, we talk about the idea of understanding in balance and out of balance. It's really that simple. That's what homeopathy is. It can't be anything else because it is energy.
Can you just give us, for new listeners, quick information about when your course is going to begin? You have a short course and then a longer 15-week course. When it begins and how we sign up?
Yes, I'm always the wrong person for this. I'm out there doing these sort of things.
Go ahead.
Well, Louise will type it up, but essentially what it is that I think we've got the longer course, which is a 15-week online course, which really can take you in that 15 weeks into understanding how you take a case and how you repertorize in this sort of very practical sort of way. That's beginning in March. And then we have a short course, I think, beginning in February.
Yeah, she typed it in February 16, begins the short course, and then the longer course begins March 29th of 2012. So you just go to your website, vcch.org, and the information is there for anybody who's interested. And so I want to thank you for getting on to the show tonight. We will have Dr. Adil Kasim talking about cardiology, heart health. He's talked about exercise, the seven kinds of exercise. He's talked about diabetes and heart failure. So he's going to have another show on Wednesday at 11 a.m. And then we're having a special guest at noon on Wednesday with Manfred Mueller talking about the cancer diathesis, and that's the cancer disease and what his approach is for that. And on Thursday we have at noon Alan Phillips talking about vaccinations, exemptions, and waivers, and following up at noon, after him at 1 p.m. on Thursday, Christina Chambreau, in Doctor of Veterinary Medicine, talks about pet health. And we've had like 13 shows with her. So this is really great. And I see people who are guests listening on are sending in their thanks in the chat line. That's really welcome to hear some responses and feedback. You can put your reminders onto the show. Ask us to send you reminders when the shows are coming on. You can tweet it, put it on your Facebook, put it on your MySpace, your embed these shows onto your website so other people can listen. And that's what we have going on this week. I hope it's a great one for everyone. and looking forward to learning a whole bunch more. I just want to make a note that somebody called into the show. I don't know whether they're just sitting there to listen. You don't need to call in to listen. Just go right on to the website, Blog Talk Radio, Homeopathy World Community, and click the listen button right on the internet or download the podcast. So that's it for tonight. And again, I guess we're going to be seeing you next week.
Yeah, not a problem.
Okay, terrific. We're going to close
the
show.
Thanks for your time, Debbie.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Homeopathy and Spatial Analysis on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopaths Debbie Bruck and Grant Bentley. We encourage you to follow our show. Click the reminder button to receive email notices when shows air. Share with friends on Facebook and MySpace and also Twitter. We welcome your comments and questions. See you next time. Thank you for listening.